Is this the era of the autodidact? I'm Joseph, this is Input English. Here on the Input English channel, we explore a lot of topics because really there are a lot of things to talk about as we find interesting topics and discuss them. That gives me an opportunity to introduce great vocabulary, but of course, introducing that vocabulary in context is the best way for you to absorb it using comprehensible input. So I started out with this initial question, is this the age of the autodidact? So what is an autodidact? An autodidact is an individual who independently learns new information and develops new skills. The autodidact does so without guidance from a teacher or an institution. This is actually not a new concept. Throughout various stages in human civilization, autodidacts have contributed a great deal. Frequently, society doesn't value self-taught experts. Society puts a lot of emphasis on degrees and certifications. In other words, society demands accountability. Does this person actually know what he or she is talking about? There are many fields in human endeavor where autodidactism is not valued. One does not seek out a surgeon who is self-taught. We wouldn't want to ride on an airplane knowing that the design engineer was self-taught. Society does demand some accountability. But often, it is possible and desirable for people to learn on their own, to take charge of their learning. This is what the autodidact does. In history, frequently we see this related to societal changes. In the Western world, the Industrial Revolution started to take hold in the late 18th century, and by the 1840s, it was well underway. The Industrial Revolution transitioned society from hand work to machine work. The blacksmiths of the late 18th century and early 19th century became the tool makers for factories. Steam power and machines marked this first era of industrial revolution. During the 1800s, after the Industrial Revolution was well underway, we saw a lot of autodidactism. People needed to learn new skills. In the late 19th century and early 20th century, we saw the development of what we could refer to as the second phase of industrial revolution, that is, mechanization. During this phase, electricity, gas, oil, mass transportation, and automobiles were developed. Oh, don't forget aviation. We can describe the third phase of the Industrial Revolution as the Digital Age. This is where computers, electronics, and automation became a big part of our society. So what would be the fourth phase of the Industrial Revolution? Arguably, it is the age of artificial intelligence and robotics. Now, in the 21st century, society still put a lot of value in certifications and formal training. Societies want accountability. However, increasingly, we have amazing opportunities to be autodidacts, to learn information and develop new skills on our own without supervision from a teacher or an institution. In the modern era, certification in a new field is often optional. We have seen the development of MOOCs. What's a MOOC? Massive Open Online Courses. Massive Open Online Courses are available online so that we can study new fields, new information. These courses may be free or inexpensive. And with MOOCs, certification is often optional. If one wants certification to put on one's resume, there is a charge for that certification. Examples of MOOCs include Udacity, Coursera, Khan Academy. Many universities offer options for people to audit courses and learn new information without registering for classes in that university. It is important that we not forget the role of individual content creators. The internet and YouTube offer amazing opportunities for the autodidact to gather information and learn new skills. So with that introduction, I would like to showcase an autodidact from the past, a historical autodidact. And of interest, I found information about this fellow because of my search for new information as an autodidact. Let's talk about Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Longfellow was an American poet from the 19th century. He was born in Portland, Maine in 1807. After his secondary education, he entered Bowdoin College at age 15. He received his bachelor's degree at Bowdoin College and was offered a faculty position. He declined that faculty position and instead went to Europe. The story goes that his father supported his expenses while he was traveling in Europe for 3 years. He spent thousands of dollars, and in today's dollars, that could approximate perhaps $70,000 in expense, perhaps more. These were expenses he accrued as he traveled through Europe studying literature and languages. During this time living in Europe, it is said that his studies were independent. He didn't attend any universities per se. His studies were independent. After 3 years of living in Europe, he returned to the United States. He corresponded with Bowdoin College, and he accepted a position on the faculty at Bowdoin College. For perhaps a half a decade, he taught literature and modern languages. During that era, he married. In 1835, at age 28, he had accepted a position at Harvard, and he and his wife went to Europe to travel again. Unfortunately, in Rotterdam, his wife sustained a complication of her pregnancy and died. Longfellow was devastated. After some time had passed, Longfellow became acquainted with Fanny Appleton. He pursued her for marriage, but she was not interested. She said no many times. He courted Fanny Appleton for 7 years. It is said that during this period of courtship and its associated frustration, he was very productive as a poet. Longfellow had published his first poem at age 13. He published poems when he was a student at Bowdoin College. And during this period of courtship of Fanny Appleton, he was very prolific. Eventually, Fanny Appleton changed her mind and agreed to marry him. They were married in 1843. And over the years, they had 6 children. Unfortunately, in 1861, when Fanny Appleton Longfellow was only 44 years old, Her dress caught fire in their home. Her husband tried to put out the fire. In so doing, he was severely burned, but her burns were much more severe. She died the following morning. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow lived to the age of 75. He died in 1882. During his life, he was a very famous and popular poet. His poems were taught in schools to children, and many of us learned his poems as part of our formal education. Two of his poems are best described as narrative poems or folk ballads, those being The Song of Hiawatha and Paul Revere's Ride. Many of his poems reflect the sadness that he experienced when he lost his first wife. The Village Blacksmith, Footsteps of Angels, and The Rainy Day are three examples where the reader can detect the grief felt by the poet when he wrote those poems. Although Longfellow was famous for his narrative poems like The Song of Hiawatha and Paul Revere's Ride, most of his poems are best described as lyric poetry. These are my favorites. These are the poems that I cherish as I read Longfellow. One of my favorite Longfellow poems is The Rainy Day. I will read it to you today. So this is The Rainy Day by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The day is cold and dark and dreary. It rains and the wind is never weary. The vine still clings to the moldering wall. But at every gust the dead leaves fall, and the day is dark and dreary. My life is cold and dark and dreary. It rains and the wind is never weary. My thoughts still cling to the moldering past, but the hopes of youth fall thick in the blast, and the days are dark and dreary. Be still, sad heart, and cease repining. Behind the clouds is the sun still shining. Thy fate is the common fate of all. Into each life some rain must fall. Some days must be dark and dreary. I offer you that poem for several reasons. One is it is one of my favorites. Two, the language is very simple. I find it very easy to understand, and I'm hoping that you will as well. The Rainy Day conveys a feeling. It's not just words. It's not just facts. It's a feeling. It's something felt by the poet, and he's sharing his sensations with us. It's also not all negative. The first two stanzas are pretty bleak, but in the third stanza, he starts with the words, "Be still, sad heart." This is a very upbeat change, a very positive sensation of hope. This poem was written in 1842. This was the time that Longfellow, after 6 years of courting Fanny Appleton, was still unsuccessful. She had not yet agreed to marry him. But of interest, in the last stanza, we get this sensation of hope, as if perhaps Longfellow was starting to understand that perhaps they would get married. I was unable to find any explicit references to that. I can't explicitly connect them. But in terms of sensation, and for our purposes, we can connect them as an idea, as a feeling. As I've said before, I don't want to turn the Input English channel into a poetry channel, but I do want to offer this part of the English language to you. I think I'm trying to right a wrong that occurred in my life. That is, as I was taught about poetry, there was a lot of emphasis on analyzing the poetry, trying to find out what it really meant. I cannot recall any of my teachers telling us to read a poem or listen to a poem and simply enjoy it. That idea was first expressed to me by my wife. Basically, she said, "Don't analyze it, just enjoy it." I am now reading, or perhaps rereading, a lot of poetry, trying to discover the beauty and the brilliance of the poet's work. And it gives me these occasional opportunities to introduce some of these fine poems to you. I have rediscovered Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's work because I am pursuing an autodidactic pathway. I am learning without the guidance of a particular teacher. I try to learn something new every day, and I was enchanted to find out that Longfellow was himself an autodidact. I hope you enjoyed this discussion of one of my favorite autodidacts. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.